Their little scam had snared the most famous politician in the country. Other, less important pieces of evidence also pointed toward Lake. His front was a mailbox service in the D.C. area, a place where Congressman Lake spent almost all of his time. Being a high-profile elected official, subject to the whims of voters every so often, he would certainly hide behind an alias. And he'd use a machine with a printer to hide his handwriting. Al had not sent a photograph, another sign that he had a lot to conceal. They'd checked recent newspapers in the library to get the dates straight. The handwritten notes had been mailed from St. Louis the day after the debate, when Lake was there because his airplane had caught fire. The timing seemed perfect for Lake to call off the letters. He'd started the correspondence before he entered the race. In 3 months, he'd taken the country by storm and become very famous. Now, he had so much to lose. Slowly and with no concern for time, they built their case against Aaron Lake. And when it looked airtight, they tried to break it down. The most compelling counterpoint came from Finn Yarber. Suppose, he said, someone on Lake's staff had access to his stationery. Not a bad question, and one they'd kicked around for an hour. Wouldn't Al Conyers do such a thing in order to hide himself? What if he lived in the D.C. area and worked for Lake? Suppose Lake, a very busy man, trusted this assistant to write personal notes for him. Yarber couldn't remember allowing an assistant such authority back when he was Chief Justice. Beach had never let anyone write his personal notes. Spicer had never fooled with such nonsense. That's what phones were for. But Yarber and Beach had never known the stress and fury of anything remotely similar to a presidential campaign. They'd been busy men in their times, they reflected with sadness, but nothing like Lake. Say it was an assistant to Lake. So far, he had a perfect cover because he told them almost nothing. No photo, only the vaguest details about career and family. He liked old movies and Chinese food, and that's about all they'd extracted. Conyers was on their list of pen pals to soon dispose of because he was too timid. Why, then, would he call off the relationship at this moment? There was no ready answer. And the argument was a long shot anyway. Beach and Yarber concluded that no man in Lake's position, someone with a good chance of becoming President of the United States, would allow anyone else to write and sign personal notes. Lake had 100 staff members to type letters and memos, all of which could be signed by him at a rapid clip. Spicer had posed a more serious question. Why would Lake run the risk of a handwritten note? His prior letters had been typed on plain white paper and mailed in a plain white envelope. They could spot a coward by his choice of stationery, and Lake was as faint-hearted as anyone who'd answered their ad. The campaign, rich as it was, had plenty of word processors and typewriters and laptops, no doubt the latest in technology. To find the answer, they went back to the little evidence they had. The letter to Carol had been written at 1:20 a.m. According to the newspaper, the emergency landing happened around 2:15, less than half an hour later. He wrote it on the plane, Yarber said. It was late. The plane was filled with people, almost 60, according to the paper. These people were exhausted, and maybe he couldn't get his hands on a computer. Then why not wait? Asked Spicer. He'd proved to be excellent at asking questions no one, especially him, could answer. He made a mistake. He thought he was being smart, and he probably was. Somehow the mail got mixed.